Okay. We're up to link number 10. I'll do the fastest review ever done of the first line. Link number 1 at 12:30. At 12:30 is a blind man who thinks that Aspen has something inside of it that will help him. Number 2 is a guy making pots who takes the Aspen, thinking it will have something inside of it that would help them. Between 2 and 3, the person has died. And in number 3, the monkey represents your mind entering a new life. Okay? Number 4, Nama Rupa, is the development of your body and your mind inside, and the other parts of you, inside your mother's womb. Number 5 is we call the sixth sense organs, organs of sense, which allow you to make contact with the outside world. They enable you to make contact with the outside world. Number 6, are we at 6, yeah? Is contact, sparsha, where those sense powers make contact with an external object. Number 7 is the feeling, arrow in the eye, of that contact. Contact was, usually it's, in the scriptures it's two people kissing, nowadays it's usually drawn as two people making love, okay? But it's contact between the eye, for example, and the external world. In 7, there's a guy with an arrow in his eye. He has made contact with an outside object, and now he feels that it's a nice thing or a bad thing, okay? It's feeling. He's either having a bad feeling or a good feeling. In this case, he's having a bad feeling. Okay. What are we up to? 8? Gepa Sepa. Gepa, number 8, is Tirshna, which means the beginning of, you can say liking things. You feel good about something, so you like it, right? And then Gupa Lemba, number 9, is you feel that liking intensifies. Okay, you feel a very strong desire. You want. You go from liking to wanting. Okay, it's similar to what Swamiji was talking about today. So I'm going to talk about number 10, which is either a very fat lady or a pregnant lady. It happens to be a pregnant lady. Okay, and you see it in about 9:30. Okay. And this in Sanskrit is bhava. And remember that the whole wheel is called bhava chakra, right? The wheel of life. So number 10 is a very crucial moment in the wheel. You have it in the Yoga Sutra. I think it's the 5th of the 5 kleshas in the 2nd chapter. What would that be? Abhinivesha. Which in many commentaries is explained as well. It's the fear at the moment of death. So number 10, link number 10 here is very close to that idea of abhinivesha. It's the woman is pregnant, and what it means is that this is the triggering and selection process of a sanskara in the last moments of your life. Okay? It's the process by which one of the many millions of deeds you've done in your life is selected and then triggered to create a new life. Okay? So this is my Lama, he learned English by watching television because I had to go to work. And so he said, oh, this is the New Jersey lottery. You know, the lady comes out in a nice dress and they spin a bunch of ping pong balls, and then she closes her eyes and she reaches in and pulls one out. And we call it sundepa. It's the process by which a particular karma is activated at the end of your life. For example, in our tradition, if you were to expose a dying person in the hospital, if you were to put them in one of those short little hospital shifts, and the room was cold, and they had one of those short little hospital blankets, and they felt cold, then a slight desire for cold, for warmth, in the dying moment, in the moment of death, could activate a sanskara for the hell realms of fire. You see what I mean? It's, we consider it a very sensitive moment in your life. You have millions of seeds in your mind. Millions of karmic seeds are in your mind. And dumb little mistakes can select one of them at the crucial moment when you pass to your next life. You see, so we consider this a very it's the most sensitive moment in your life. It's the moment of the selection of the karma that will throw you into your next life. It will decide what your next life is. If you've done more good deeds, substantially more good deeds than bad deeds, then your chance at lottery time is better, right? Statistically, your chances are better. That's the idea, okay? But still, there could be the odd thought at the last moment, and that would throw you into a different birth. So the process is, if you think the process sounds unfair and scary and dangerous, that's exactly what it is. It's the last moments of your life. It's a very fright. So we have a very strong tradition of making sure that the dying person is comfortable, that there's nobody crying or screaming, or that the room is quiet and sort of not too bright, and they are dying peacefully, and then there'll be a chance that they will select a good karma. I think the process of how a karma is selected is important. So it's close to abhinivesha, and it's close to what Swamiji talked about today with the idea of me. So I thought I would talk a little bit about that. You know, there's a specific attitude at death that if you have it, the bad sanskaras are activated. And if you don't have it, there's a chance that you could achieve liberation in the dying moments. You see? So we call it chit, or poa, it's called the conscious transference of your consciousness to abandon life, at the last moment. So what would be a helpful thing to do at the last moment, okay? This gets into the real meaning of links 8 and 9, okay? Number 8 was Trishna, right? It was a feeling of liking. And then number 9 was a feeling of wanting. And these are traditionally explained as the emotions of the last hours of your life. Okay, it's not just general wanting during your life. Usually they're explained, 8 and 9 are the feelings of attachment that you have in the last minutes of your life, okay? And they trigger the pregnant lady. The pregnant lady means a samskara has been loaded with a timer, and it's going to go off. I always tell people I saw this really bad movie, John Travolta movie, and I think it was called Broken Arrow or something like that. Something. You never saw it because it was so bad. It couldn't get off. He finds out there's a nuclear weapon in a salt mine nearby a large city. And he has 15 minutes to get to the nuclear weapon. So, you know, he's like falling down the mine shaft, and he's climbing down. And he gets down to the bottom by miracles, you know, Neskando. And he reaches the bottom, and there's this moment that I'll never forget. The timer is on a nuclear device can't explode itself, right? It needs a smaller explosion first. So there's a timer that will set off the smaller explosion, which is the 8 and 9, which is link number 8 and 9, okay? If the smaller explosion never goes off, you can have a big bomb full of uranium, nothing will happen, right? You need a smaller explosion to trigger the larger explosion. So 8 and 9 are like the dynamite. There's a small amount of dynamite in a nuclear device which goes off and then it sets off the nuclear device. So you can think of 8 and 9 as the detonating powder, and then your samskara is the atomic bomb. Why? Because one little thing, one little thought at the end of your life is going to, we say it's going to throw or project, we call it penjikile, it's going to throw a 70-year life, or a 100-year life, or a 500-year life. In this tiny one moment, like a nuclear bomb, is going to destroy a city. Its power is almost immeasurable. Of one karmic seed, that you got when you took the aspirin the wrong way. When you were 36 at the ashram in West 2, you know, and you got a cold. And that happens to be the seed that comes up. And then that will project the whole life. That one seed will project the whole life. That will project 60 or 70 years. So I think a nuclear device is a good example. But what kills me, I remember, he gets down, he straddles the nuclear device. He's got this nuclear device between his legs, you know? And to me, it was just like something weird. And then he's working on it, and it's ticking down, you know, like 10, 9, 8. And he's like got his legs across it. And I'm just imagining how it would feel when it goes off, you know? And it's just a weird feeling for me, you know? It's like, that's how you should feel about the last samskara. There's a single small thing which will just infinite power that will change the course of your life for 100 years, 200 years. What you decide at that moment, what comes into your mind at that moment, is this, it determines where you go and what you become. You see? And it's not fair. You can be a cruddy person your whole life, a really bad person, but if you help one person and you recall that as you die, it like throws you. You see what I mean? So, how do 8 and 9 trigger 10? You see, what is it that triggers a karmic sin in your mind? Like, I have 4 minutes to tell you. And it gets into what Swamiji taught today. It's very beautiful today. Every day is beautiful. My Lama would say, oh, yesterday wasn't beautiful. But it has to do with me, okay? It has to do with me. Abhinivesha in our tradition has to do link 8 and link 9 triggering the samskara. Where did the samskara come? Which link did the samskara come? Which link was it planted in? Link number 2, okay? And then number 10 is the same samskara, but it's pregnant. It's about to blow up, okay? So 8 and 9 bring it to the point of blowing up. They trigger 10. So what's happening in 8 and 9? Is it just that you want something? Like if you want an ice cream at that moment, or you're born into the cold house, or something like that, which we say is possible. But it's not that simple, okay? There has to be a vidya. 8 and 9, the trigger that sets off the samskara, the last seed in your life, has to have a vidya. Okay? So not only is a vidya required for planting a karma, it's required for ripening a karma. If between the time you plant a karma and the time it blows up and throws you into another life, you gain vidya, knowledge, you can do what John Travolta did. Guess what he did? He like pulled out the right wire at one. Okay? Like you can disarm all the samskaras at the last minute. It's possible. Okay? We say it's kind of smart to do it before that. You know, like maybe 10 years before. You might want to do it, you know, now. And then you don't have to worry about... We say at the moment of your death you're a little bit scared. And you don't think so clearly. So better to disarm everything now. You, with some good acts of knowledge, you can disarm it. Okay, you can disarm it. And I'll give you one. I'll just give you, and this is the most powerful one. Right? So people were asking me, oh, you know, Geshe Michael, we live in an ashram where we are taught to think of the fruits of our actions and not, what do you call it? Not be attached to the fruits of your actions. Give away the fruits of your actions. Don't desire the fruits of your action. That's another kind of attachment, right? To be attached to, oh, I'm going to give Laura Christie an aspirin because then my aspirin will work for me. This seems like a selfish thing, okay? And people, it's a very good question. Many, many people ask me about that question. And I think we have to answer it. And I'm going to give you the tough answer, the hard answer. And I figure it will plant a seed and someday it will come up, okay? So anyway, here we go. And I did a dry run with the guys at the dinner table tonight. We practiced the anthem, okay? So anyway, I've got, like, now I've got 2 minutes of time. Consider why it is that when you do something nice for someone else, it comes back to you. Why is that? You know? Why do you have to have someone else? Basically, karma is like an echo. You need another person to get it back, okay? Almost always, you need another person to do the karma too, for it to come back to you. So really, in that sense, you need everybody else in the world. You need them to bounce your karma, your actions off of, to come back to you, right? And that's why karma works, because you think of them as someone else. And therein lies the problem. Got it? Like, the reason karma works, the reason karma bounces off another person back to you, is that you think they're a different person. And that's how karma operates. That's why karma comes back to you. So what happens if I follow a different kind of reasoning? I'll throw the reasoning to you, and then you have to... My lama would just get up and leave. He'd say, digest it. You know, jubare. You have to digest it. You know. So I'll throw it at you, and then you have to digest it. Okay? Me, Michael, is defined... The edge of Michael is defined by the one who hurts if you stick a pin across that edge. Okay? So Michael is defined. Let's say this is a pin, okay? If you stick a pin in the stage, Michael doesn't, I don't go ouch. Therefore, in this idea, the stage is not Michael. Okay? But if you stick a pin through this border here of skin and air, if you pass that border with a pin, Michael will say ouch. Then that's Michael. That's how you can find Michael. Michael is defined by the person who is helped or hurt by an action. Okay? That's all. Who's Michael? Who's me? Me is the person that, if you cross a line with a pin, I go ouch. Okay? Got it? So let's say I want an ice cream, okay? I got over ice cream. I have other desires now. But anyway, let's say I want an ice cream, right? So I want to have a good feeling on ice cream, right? So generally, you can say Michael got an ice cream if it passes this line. You see? If it passes this line and goes into this mouth, I get a good feeling, okay? That's what Michael is. Michael is... The line at where Michael starts is drawn by the area where if ice cream goes there, he feels good. Got it? That's the Buddhist definition. One definition of me. Okay? But now we have a different thing going on. I cannot get an ice cream unless I give her an ice cream. Okay? I cannot. It's impossible. According to our belief, it's impossible that you ever got an ice cream in your life without serving someone else. It's not possible. You can only get a pleasant experience by providing a pleasant experience to someone else. It's impossible to do otherwise, okay? So, what you're saying is that, get this, unless I pass her lips with an ice cream, unless I pass her lips with an ice cream, I cannot have a feeling of pleasure. Got it? Unless I pass her lips with an ice cream, I cannot. It's not possible for me to have a pleasure. Where's Michael? Michael's the one that the line has to pass to feel good or feel bad. It's the edge of Michael. The ice cream must pass her lips for Michael to feel good with ice cream. Therefore what? She is Michael. She is Michael. Don't treat her like Michael. Don't love her as if she were yourself. You see? She is yourself. She, by every dictate of logic, you know, by simple clear thinking, you can prove that she's not like me, and she wants ice cream too, and I should be considerate, I should think of her, I should try to imagine what she wants, or forget all that. I must do that. because she is me. By this definition, she is me. Okay? And if you practice this in your life, don't serve someone, a guest at dinner because they're a guest. They are you. Okay? They are not you. They are you. You are feeding yourself when you feed a guest. And we are one body. Guruji said, you are one body. We are one body. If you believe that, if you come to a place where you believe that, you are John Travolta tearing out the wire. Okay? And you will not be thrown into another suffering birth. If in your life you practice this knowledge that she is my God, then at the last moment, no sanskaras will go up. You will enter a paradise. You won't enter samsara. You won't be thrown back into samsara. Not possible. The bomb can't go off. Okay? Very beautiful teaching. To save yourself, see that, as Swamiji said, really everyone is you. By logic, they are you. By reasoning, they are you. So just feed yourself. Okay.
So, back to the wheel of life. link number 11 is jati, or birth. So you see the very graphic picture here, I don't know if you can see it, of a baby actually coming out of the woman. I mean, nowadays we've got all sorts of graphic pictures on the web and whatever, but in these days this was a very racy, you know, graphic picture. So, you know, links number 11 and 12 are actually very depressing links.
They're all depressing,
says Geshe Michael. It's true. Normally, when we think of somebody having a baby, we are congratulating them, and we're saying, oh, how wonderful, what a cute baby, and then the parents are always like, oh, it's the cutest baby that ever existed, and you're like, yes, that's right, and I want to see the 50th picture of the same face. You know, it's a very exciting and happy time, and you know, but here in the Wheel of Life, this is like so tragic that another being has born, that you have been born again, because it means another suffering existence in the Wheel of Life. It means, oh my God, I didn't get it right the last time, and I have to go back and do it all over again. And we've been doing it and doing it and doing it since beginningless time, and we're going to keep doing it until we stop the cycle, until we stop the ignorance at link number one. So, you know, we come into all sorts of different kinds of births here, and sometimes they're kind of nice, and sometimes they're not so nice. But all of them are a kind of suffering. All of them are a pain. Why? Because we don't know how to do anything to get what we want. We have no idea how to do something in order to get what it is we want. What do we want? We want happiness, and we want to avoid suffering. We want happiness to come, we want to avoid pain. But we have no idea how to do that. So we're projected, for instance, you know, you'll be projected into, say you did some really good karmas in your last life, but you did them with ignorance. You know, you get projected into some kind of God realm, and you're there for maybe 1,000 years. You have a life for 1,000 years, and you have a really subtle body. It's not like this gross body of flesh and blood. It's actually a very subtle body. And you feel good all the time. And people call it like heaven or something. But it's not heaven, because after 1,000 years of this place, with no warning at all, your time is just up and you start to die. And at that moment, every single other person around you just turns their back on you, because they don't want to see death, and because they're not dying, and because it's such a pain. Like, it's such, you can't even imagine losing this place. So even if you get to a very pleasant place, there's the suffering of having to have it ripped away from you. And then because all you've been doing in that place is using up your good karmic seeds, you go straight to the bottom usually from there. You know, you go, we're going to talk about all the different realms of existence. You know, we're going to talk about the angel realms and the hell realms, and you go straight from top to bottom. But see, within the top and the bottom, it's still just a wheel. It's still just this cycle of pain because you have no control over it. You can't stay an extra 5 days. You know, when your time is up, you get booted out and you go straight to the bottom again, and then you get cycling around. It's best if we get a human rebirth, because they say that human rebirth is actually the only birth in which we can practice spiritual things. Why? Because we've got half and half. We've got half suffering and half happiness. If you are in one of the like terrible lower realms, you have so much pain that you really can't focus on anything. If you are in one of the God realms, you have so much pleasure that you don't see any reason to focus on anything depressing like a spiritual path, you know? No, seriously, it's not, it doesn't cross your mind at all. I've actually been to places that remind me of God realms before. You know, I was talking to one person who happens to be managing a center in LA. I was like, Southern California is a God realm, you know? It's very, very difficult to get people. I'm sure in a city like New York, you have the same problem. But it's very, very difficult to get people focused and interested in a spiritual path because you've got to compete with, like, surfing and movie industry and, like, all of this activity. You know, you can go surfing and skiing in the same day in California. I mean, it's and everybody's so focused on fulfilling their immediate sense gratifications that they don't have any interest in spiritual things until it's too late. You know? So you can see, even in this existence that we have, remnants of those kind of places, like God realms and stuff like that. So that is number 11. And, you know, when we die and we go on to our next birth, even if we take a human rebirth, there is no guarantee that we will be in a situation where we've got the time to practice or basic human needs like food and shelter. Maybe you'll have to be working constantly to feed your family. I mean, there's lots of people on this planet that don't have the luxury of sitting around in an ashram all day. You know, there's a lot of people, and you probably know some of them, and they could never come here, and they never will come here, and their whole life they won't come here. They just don't have the karmic seeds for that. And it's like this lack of karma to be able, like, yes, they have a human rebirth, but it's not really, because they don't have spiritual opportunities. Or you could be born in a place where you have the time, but you just don't have the inclination. Like, you just forgot when you were born again. Oh, why was it, you know, why would anyone do yoga? You know? Like, that seems so silly to me. You know what I mean? Like, suddenly your mind changes. And you can't hang on to anything. All the spiritual progress that you made throughout your life, it goes out the window. And, you know, maybe you learned a lot of Sanskrit, or maybe you studied a lot of ancient philosophical texts, and you know all these shlokas by heart, and it's lost. You know, and you have to start over again. And there's no guarantee you're going to start at the place where you left off. So it's a big risk to be reborn. It's a big risk not to finish your spiritual career in this lifetime. So when you see the birth, you should be, like, there should be sort of a fear. Like, oh, we don't want that to happen, you know? Because we don't know where we're going when we get born again. So Then we're on to link number 12, which is the last link of the outside. And you see in the picture, this is called Jara Marana, and it means old age and death. Normally, there are a picture of two people. One is a guy with a cane, walking with a cane, who represents the old person. And then the other is someone with a big parcel on his back, walking up a hill. And in Tibet, it was the custom for when you died, you would pay somebody to carry your body up to the top of a hill, or someone else would pay someone because you're dead. So one of your family members would pay somebody to carry your body up to the top of the hill, and they have like this big axe with them, and they chop your body into bits, and they put like sambar or barley flour mixed in with it, and they throw it to the vultures. Because they say, you know, the mind has left the body, and we might as well benefit some being by feeding them. So they use the body to feed the animals. And so that's why when Lati Rinpoche passed the graveyard, he was like, ha, 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 what a waste of space. You remember that yesterday? Because Tibetans think it's ridiculous to have graveyards. Because, like, who's there? You know? Like, what's the point? The mind has already gone on to its next birth. Why are you saving the rotting flesh that no longer has any consciousness? So, why don't we have like old age as a link and then death is number 13? Like, wouldn't that be like a nice progression? You know, birth, old age, death. This is kind of an easy question compared to Geshe Michael's question. Not everybody gets old before they die. Some people die in the womb, you know? I mean, it's not guaranteed that you will ever reach old age. In fact, there is one beautiful scripture by Arya Nagarjuna, who is a very famous sage of our tradition, who says it's a miracle that you wake up every morning. It's absolutely a miracle. The amount of karmic seeds that it takes us to sustain this human form and this human body is so vast, you can't even imagine. Like, we are, if you consider that every single thing is a projection of our own mind, you've got karmic seeds that are projecting all the necessary elements on the planet that you need to live in order for you to even breathe here on this planet. It's projecting all of the functions of your body. It's projecting your mental processes. It's projecting everything. I mean, the amount of projections that it takes for you to go through a single day in this continued inhabited body, it's astounding if you actually sit and think about it. And so in our tradition, it's very customary for us to go through what we call a death meditation. And it's not actually as depressing as it seems. It's actually very rejuvenating. You know, we go through a three-step process where we say, okay, well, death is coming. Because the majority of people here, I'm looking around, they're pretty young people in this temple. So it's kind of hard to imagine almost that we're ever going to leave. Or that, you know, you have to be around somebody who's actually dying in order to get that feeling viscerally of what it's going to be like. So you go through this process where you actually make yourself face the fact that if I do not change something radically in my own spiritual practice, I am going to end up at link number 12. It's inevitable. If I don't consciously turn back the wheel, that's where everybody ends up. And then step number two, and I have no idea when that's going to be. absolutely no idea. It could be tomorrow, it could be next week, it could be next month. And what would I do if I knew it was next month? Like, how would you change your life if someone told you you only have a month more to live? I mean, sure, first you would go through like a big fear process, but then after that you'd be like, okay, I gotta get down the most important stuff. What is the most important things that I can do in the next month? And you would really start to focus on what it is you really wanted to do with this life. I think so many people, they think they have so much time. All the time. People are like, yeah, I'll do it tomorrow. You know, or I'll do it next month or next year, or maybe I'll get around to it someday. You know, I have this idea that I want to go to India, but you know, I've got other stuff to do, and you know what I mean? And it's like you have these dreams in your mind. You have all these dreams in your heart of fulfilling your destiny, of fulfilling your spiritual destiny. And then we don't do them because we get distracted by all this other stuff, like daily stuff, because we think that we're going to last forever. We really have this thought, and it's not true. So it's a very helpful process to start thinking, what would I do? Like, start with, what do I do if I only have a year? Like, what would I do in the next year? You can do it. You can do it when you wake up tomorrow morning. It's like, tomorrow morning, okay, tomorrow starts the year. What am I going to do with my next year? And then you use the time so well that you start to create these radically different seeds in your life, and then you actually start to, you do start to turn back the wheel. And you do start to change the process. And you do start to push back death. Swamiji said today about, he was talking about death also, and he says, because he was talking about Arjuna, for those of you who aren't in the class, he's talking about Arjuna looking across the battlefield and seeing relatives and friends on the other side and having to face the fact that he might never see them again. And he's grieving. You know, he's grieving for them. And Swamiji says, we grieve because we know it's not supposed to be this way. In somewhere, I'm paraphrasing. He's like, I don't know. Somewhere inside of us, we've got this feeling that that's not supposed to be the way that it should go for us. We're not supposed to get old and die. I know every single other person that you've ever met has done that. And there's nobody in your life right now who has not gotten old or died when they were supposed to. You know, like your only experience viscerally seeing the way that the world works, like there was no report in U.S. News and World Report that said somebody reversed the wheel of life and they start to get younger. You know what I mean? There hasn't been in your lifetime maybe those kind of situations or those kind of actual, but somehow even still we've got that instinct. Like, we're not supposed to die. We're not supposed to get old and die. We're meant for something else. We're meant for something greater. We're meant for, there's some kind of evolutionary process that we are supposed to take. We are supposed to evolve into different kind of beings. Beings that don't die. Beings that don't have to experience the pain of loss. Beings that know how to do things in order to create the world that they want. Our ultimate goal is not to get the aspirin to work for us. Our ultimate goal is not to need the aspirin in the first place. You know, we're so worried about whether the aspirin works or not, but that's like such a small scale. It's such a small goal. The ultimate goal is not to need it at all. The ultimate goal is far beyond that. You change into a totally different being. You change into this body of light that radiates out you know, billions of emanations without any kind of conscious thought at all. Kind of like you are just like the sun, and the sun is just shining its rays without having to think of which ray to shine on this person or that person. It's just automatic. You send out these billions of emanations, and you have this immense love in your heart and this immense knowledge. You have this omniscient state of mind that sees all the past, all the present, and all the future in one single second. So actually, your ultimate evolution right now is looking at you in the temple. So you can wave, say hello to your... No, you think about it. Like, they're there waiting for you to get to them. Because you will, because we all will, because knowledge is stronger than ignorance in the end. And that's how we know we're all going to get there, eventually. Okay.
Sashi Poki Tukshi Meto
Yeah.